All right, everybody, it's time for the RGH podcast. The Real Gamer Hour is about to begin, and we got some juicy topics. Oh my god, that's the wrong screen. There we go. Okay, you know what? I'm gonna cut this episode short. I already messed up and switched to the wrong screen. This is not a good start. Also, my teammates here are muted. So that's fun. There, now you're unmuted. Hi, guys.
Thank you. I was like, I'd love to be a part of this intro. It'd be great.
You're here.
Yeah.
So I have some really bad news. I have a call. I had a call today, and I wanted to do this live on the episode so I can get your reaction. I got a call today.
Oh, no.
About my hot tub.
Oh, no!
It is still delayed. It won't be until well past Christmas. So... no Christmas hot tub with the boys. No New Year's Eve hot tub. It's gonna
what
be
are we
well
doing this for? What are we doing this for?
I know.
It's not
I
hot
know.
Tubbing
what's
with
this all
your
been
boys.
About?
What are we? Yeah, exactly. You know what? We're going to end the podcast there, guys. It's been a good run. We're out of here.
It'll happen.
It's been
happen.
It was my goal to shoot my January Manscaped ad from the hot tub with the guys.
Right?
What better place to talk about proper ball management? You know?
But we can at least talk about some gaming
here
second. Today. Thank you so much. Oh, my God. $100. $200 in RGH donations. You can get yourself your own hot tub now because...
yeah.
I mean, you're... Yeah.
What a, I was going to say...
What a legend.
First of all, Christopher, big supporter since forever. Absolute legend. But I was joking the first one. I said, that's half of TV's whiskey bottle for tonight. So... hence the other half, I guess it makes sense. We can afford one entire whiskey bottle for TV.
Oh, my stars.
Only the top shelf stuff for this guy.
Alrighty, so we're going to talk about Bungie today. They got exposed for some toxic workplace stuff and some breaking news like 7 minutes before the podcast. We'll talk about that. Royal
and
2.
We all have our own interesting stories about Bungie that we may share.
Yeah.
Nothing as big as some other people, but certainly some just kind of interesting stuff in a little some interesting stuff that corroborates what other people are saying.
Yeah. Halo Pro cheats. Royal 2 cheated in a tournament. It's a little bit different than you might think, but it's still considered cheating, and he is now in hot water. Microsoft admitted to literally killing a studio. They just nuked a studio. And then talk about some Game Awards stuff, things we saw, things we're excited about. And then Battlefield cuts the lobby size down. We'll talk about that if we've got time. And we've got a couple other little topics that we might hit in After Dark. But let's get started with Bungie getting exposed. So this week, there was an article that came out through IGN where, was it 26 people came forward saying that Bungie was a toxic workplace. There were... allegations of kind of an old boys club feel. There were people that, should have been punished and weren't punished. There were people that were really using their control. And, you know, people in the narrative team who felt like they were harassed by the community, but even people within the studio and didn't really have any protection or support. And there's a lot there. There's a whole article through IGN about it. But then it kind of escalated from there because we even saw Mylan Games, who's a YouTuber in the Destiny community, who did a small contract there that was like, yeah, I had a terrible time there too. Like, it was absolutely brutal. And so we'll touch kind of on all those different things. Where do you guys want to start with this?
Yeah, it's a pretty wild story. It's kind of like, so I think we can all agree on a couple of things. Like, the first thing to mention is like... these claims seem extremely legit. Not only is it quite a few sources coming forward, again, you have someone like Mylan Games, who we've all met. I definitely like believe Mylan Games' experience, certainly. And so this is something that should be taken seriously. Even though it's not from what's coming out, it's like it's nowhere near as bad as the Activision stuff. It's also like kind of a showcase as to like you don't necessarily need to be, you know, overtly... you know, physically assaulting people, like sometimes in the Activision case, and like you don't have to go Cosby Suite level bad, which is like
right.
They literally called the Cosby Suite. You don't have to go that bad for things to still be a toxic work environment.
Yeah.
And like we all thought Bungie was like, we're like, good thing they have left Activision, right? And
yeah.
It's like apparently they're like also pretty toxic. With all that being said, it was also mentioned, even by like the people coming forward with their stories, that like in the past couple years, especially like kind of, I think there was like almost like a turning point around like 2019, like kind of from 2019 forward, things have been improving. But even though they've been improving, not everything is fixed, and
new safety measures and policies implemented to help protect people. You know, absolutely,
it's not fully solved.
Yeah, and the stories did seem like they were specific to certain sub communities within the Bungie. Like, Bungie's big, right? It's a lot of people. It's a big company, and so it definitely didn't, from what I could gather, sound like it was a entire workplace issue. It was really these sort of sub communities and these old guard guys kind of enforcing their will and everything, and even like taking credit for ideas. That really, like, just reading that, like, I just felt so bad for people who
Well, I don't think it was like just the narrative team. I think there was some, like, obviously they tried to put together this like diversity, which wouldn't be overseeing the entire studio, and then that fell apart and stuff like that. Like, there's a big story we highly recommend. We highly recommend going and reading the IGN article if you haven't. But yeah, like you said, TV, some of the stuff they're accused of is, like, the narrative team, especially, like you brought up, was apparently super crappy. Like, people would do all this work, and then some guy would be like, this is not my vision, my original vision from Destiny 1, and then, like, make them redo it, yell at people, scream at people. Like,
yeah, all under this umbrella of Bungie is about teams, and everything's better with teamwork. And then it's like, some guys, it's like, my story, my way, that doesn't fit my vision. Yeah,
but also, well, it's like, well, what is the story? And it's like, well, it's in my head. And it's like, well, we're the narrative team trying to make this story. So it's like, what do you want? And like, how are we supposed to know what your vision is? It's just like, well, and honestly, that's the exact same thing that happened with Mylan. Like, it kind of escalated there. If you didn't see the video, Mylan Games, he's always been kind of a lore nerd guy, and he's really good at it. He knows about the Destiny lore probably more than, you know, many of the people that work at Bungie on the game. And they hired him to do like an anthology of all the lore in the game. And he created these books with different passages. And
Like you said, three lore books that Bungie was going to sell. He was in charge of taking all these random, like, there's hundreds, if not thousands, of Grimoire entries and putting them in a very specific order for each chapter.
It makes sense. It flows well. Yeah.
Which is like hard to do. Like, if they would have done it wrong, it would make no sense. It was like, why are we, you know what I mean? Like, it would, people would really hate it. But they didn't. They loved it. Like, the lore anthology books sold out. They did so well. They ended up making a fourth one. But continue with the story, Tash. Here's what happened.
Well, he put everything together, and then at the last minute, they looped in one of the old guard, and they're like, yeah, we're going to get him to kind of check things over. And the guy was like super condescending and like, yeah, I don't know if this is really good. Like, why
can
are
you
making
explain literally all of your decisions right now in the last week, 1 week before the deadline?
And Mylan is like, well, luckily, you know, I've worked in healthcare and I do document everything and why those decisions. And so he broke down, this is the reason why all of these cards are in place, because it builds on this and builds on this and builds on this. And if I didn't do it, it wouldn't make any goddamn sense. Like, that's why, because I know the lore.
And the thing about it at the very end that sent him over the top, and it would me too, is the fact that when the book came out and he saw the final draft, like the PDF final form of it,
this is what's going to print, right?
Yeah, this is it. This is the product. This is what's going out. And it just says that Mylan Gaines is like consultant. He was a consultant on the project.
He was told, no, I
did the project.
They told him originally that in those credits he would be like lore curator, Mylan Games, and then obviously his name. But then the old guard guy that came in for the last week, he's the lore curator. Lore curator, random dude from Bungie who's helped for a week, and did he even help? Like, he just kind of showed up, right?
Yeah, at
he's
the end now of the lore year curator, of his contract.
And then trash YouTube consultant dude, Mylan Games, right? Yeah. You know, not actually, but like basically, and so. Yeah, that's so scummy. Like, they told him, you're going to be the lore curator in the credits. Last minute, they, like, bring him down and give this other guy his credit. And then he kind of says, hey, I don't feel like consultant is fair. I literally curated this. Like we talked about earlier, I picked which entries go where. Like, that was me. I curated this. I didn't. You didn't, like, no one consulted with me.
Hold on. There's no I in team.
Okay, we're going to get to that. So he made an email and got a call from Bungie. And just like what Tash did to me, mid-sentence of him saying, hey, like, I was told I was going to be this, and I don't understand why it was changed. This Bungie old guard person's like, hey, there's no I in team. Like, this is a team effort. If you think you got to, like, work as a team, and as a team, we randomly drop you down in the credits. Like, oh, bro, it's like if you say, hey, Leonardo DiCaprio, you're going to be the main actor. And then actually, you're going to be supporting. Then the movie comes out, supporting actor Leonardo DiCaprio. He'd sue. He'd be like, what the hell? Like, so super crazy. And then I think they realized last minute, like, oh, crap, this guy can, like, expose us. We better, like, but yeah, so just a good example of just how, like, that's just such a scummy thing, right? Like, oh, by the way, you're not credited as what we told you to be credited as anymore.
Right.
Yeah. Well, he said it, he had a long conversation with the guy. He said it was a very unpleasant conversation. He said, I absolutely hated talking to this guy in the way that he talked to me. But to his credit, we came to an understanding and got his title changed to something that was more suitable to him and that he was comfortable with. But he walked away from the experience very displeased, obviously.
Right?
And I can't blame him for that. But that sort of speaks to the Bungie workplace experience that these people are referencing and the kind of old guard that, kind of being the imposers of their will.
Hold on. Someone in the chat's like, a curator is not the same as an author. Putting together an art collection is not the same as making it. No, 100% it's not. That's why he wasn't the author. He was just credited as the lore curator because he curated the lore. The thing was, he was dropped down to consultant, which he obviously did more than consult. Like, that was the issue. Like,
and the other thing too, is like, it's like, okay, no, he might have not written the grimoire card, but there's like 50 people at the company. I don't know how many people that are all doing like one weapon and what's the lore for that weapon and what's the grimoire card that goes with that mission and that thing. And there's all these pieces of information. He needs an encyclopedia understanding of all of this content to put it together. So while he might not have written it, how many other people in the community, in the world, could do what he did as good as he did?
Bife, like you said,
maybe
he's like him and Bife. That's it.
Like, there's like two people in the Destiny community, maybe that could do it.
And he said, I had little to no help because he said, which makes sense because now I'm reading this story that says that some of these people in this narrative team that I needed a liaison with were working 60 to 100 hour weeks. And he's like, it totally makes sense that every time I approach them and I'm like, hey, I need your input on this, they're like, I can't. Like, sure, yeah, that looks good. I gotta, you know what I mean?
That was another, that's another big thing. Bungie would say publicly, hey guys, we at Bungie, we're the best studio. We reduced crunch. We don't crunch anymore. This is a toxic thing. Then secretly, they were crunching like crazy. People were working 100-hour work weeks. And here's where it gets even crazier. So basically, what happened was because they were like outspoken against crunch, people who were crunching, people were working overtime hours and hiding them. Like, they weren't reporting their overtime hours. They're basically kind of just working extra hours because, like, crunch was viewed as negative. And if you did have to work overtime, it was like, well, why'd you have to crunch, right? Like, in their own studio. So, like, they were still crunching, and then they would, like, have to kind of hide the crunch because they were like, oh, you're not supposed to crunch. But it's like, you still often have to crunch if there's a deadline, right? Mm-hmm. And it's just kind of like, it created not a great work environment.
Do you know the other thing that I wonder, though, is like, there's a lot of companies that overtime might not be mandatory. Maybe it is, but like, some people work overtime. And like, I know for a fact, like, I quote unquote crunch. Is crunch only bad when you are forced to do it? Or like there's no benefit to it? Because like, if you crunch and you're working extra hours, but you're getting paid extra, it would be worth it. Like, it's like, I'm putting in more time, getting paid. But I'm wondering, like, is it because in a lot of the studios, the crunch is happening and they're not getting paid for it as well because they're on a salary? Because then it's terrible, right?
Yeah, I wonder, right? Like, I mean, like you said, like, when the new DLC comes out, I'm crunching. I'm up for like 24 hours, 30 hours sometimes doing stuff, right?
Yeah.
But it's like, I'm obviously getting benefits from that and it's my own volition. And then I can relax later and I can do all this other stuff. I think it's different. Like, there's also like really insane. It's not just like for a few days. It's like for weeks. Like, there are stories of not necessarily a Bungie, but like industry crunch of like people had to sleep under their desks and type. Yeah. Like, it's just like, gets so intense. And it's a lot because, I mean, we talk about Battlefield 2042. That game's obviously not finished. Like, God knows what DICE had to do in the final weeks leading up to the games. Like, all the different stuff they had to do to, like, release it. Because EA is like, we got to release for the holiday season, right?
Right.
It's like, bro.
Yeah, that's
true. Here's the big difference, though, honestly. And just about everybody who's reporting on the story is calling attention to this. Like, they're fairly assessing all the bad stuff that happened. And that's absolutely fair. Those stories need to be heard, validated, and understood, and change needs to happen. But the one thing that's like a stark contrast to Activision is you got Bobby Kotick over there. We've talked a ton about how they've handled their situation. We're like, suppress the workers' voices. Let's bring a firm in here to basically protect our board against the people. And then you've got Pete Parsons, who says, we screwed up. It happened under my watch. You know, it happened under me and my leadership, and I take full responsibility for that. Feel free to hold us accountable. We're going to be taking, we've already taken some steps. We're going to continue to take active steps to protect our workers, to make sure that these things that have happened, that definitely happened. These things happened. We're going to make sure we can do everything we can to make sure they don't happen again. You know, yeah. And that's like a stark contrast to what you're seeing with the Activision stuff. And, you know, their workers are literally on strike, like walking out, like we're not doing this anymore.
I think it should be noted, though, before, we have a couple of our own stories, but like, I think something that's important to say, because there's some people saying like, I crunch in my job, right? And it's true, like a lot of jobs, like you're going to have to crunch. And then like a lot of jobs is just like, you just got to work. You know what I mean? But I think with Bungie's case, but the reason this article, I think, kind of hit differently is because Bungie is very like overtly the good guys. It kind of surprised people because, again, we would constantly good thing Bungie left Activision. Bungie's not doing what Activision's doing, and no, they didn't to the degree. But I think it's kind of an example of that like progressive corporatism, right? Where you see Bungie and they're like, on Women's Day, we at Bungie celebrate women. We love women, and we're hiring more women, and that's all great. Until one of the quotes that stuck with me from the article was a woman saying, yeah, Bungie brags about how many women they hire. Wait until you see how many women leave the company.
Right.
Right. And it's like, it's kind of like, oh, you're so you're doing it. Like, you're so amazing on Twitter for the clout, but then IRL, you have a toxic work environment. Right. Mm-hmm. And I think that kind of almost critical aspect of it has got a lot of people kind of more upset at Bungie, right? And that's a good point. Like, there was a woman who was one of the new community member team members not even like a year ago. And I obviously, whenever there's a new community team member, like I follow them, whatever, she's already gone. Like, I didn't even know she left the company, and she kind of retweeted the article and actually highlighted the point that, like, yeah, you don't have to have the Cosby suite to be a sexist work environment. So it's like, yeah, it is kind of like, hey, Bungie, you can hire all the women you want, but if you don't have a good work environment and they're all leaving, like, what are you really doing? You're not being progressive. Like, you're not. Mm-hmm.
Speaking of women leaving, talking to chat. Did we talk about the HR?
7 minutes ago, this was announced. Or 7 minutes before we started the stream, the head of Bungie HR gone. Yeah. So,
and like, there's a lot to unpack there. If you just read her statement, it's like, wait, why are you leaving? It doesn't really make sense. You have to read both articles. You know, there's allegations that, like, the HR team was a little bit biased or, like, didn't do as much as could have been done. And, you know, there were people that got protected at Bungie and things like that. So, I don't know.
Yeah,
it's like, when you have a company with this many people, you're bound to have some bad eggs. And
yeah.
You know, it is up to you to smite that shit. Like, if I found out one of my employees' breast milk was stolen from the fridge, I'd be like, who took that effing milk? And I would curb stuff. Like, it'd be done. Like, if I was in a company like that and I found out one of my female employees' breast milk was stolen from the fucking company fridge, like, I would go scorch earth, and I'd be like, I literally won't pay anyone until someone fesses up. Like rat on your person and we're going to get them out of here. Like,
no, well, you're not allowed to do that.
I know, but
I know.
There's
something.
There's got to be
something.
Yeah.
That's a good point. And it's also to what you said, there's bound to be bad eggs. And you're right. It's like, no matter what you do, you can't like predict everything. You're going to hire someone who's immensely talented, but kind of a jerk every once in a while. Right. But it's also the issue was the old guard. These jerks were like the people that were so up from like the Halo days that they were like untouchable and like no one could criticize them. Right. And their way was, it was their way or the highway.
And now apparently a handful of them have left or are gone. And so if you look at who has been fired in the past 3 years, you can make some speculations of like,
oh, dude,
who might have been affecting that. And
yeah, it's like thing. They said like a lot of high up Bungie guys they started to get rid of. And there was like a time around that 2019 like turning point where like a lot of high up people left the company. And then someone like, you know, Josh Hamrick. Now, I'm not, please, not accusing him of absolutely anything, but he was a high up guy at Bungie at left. And now I feel sorry for people like Josh Hamrick because now it's like they have a shadow over their head. Were they involved in this kind of sus
toxicity? Yeah, everyone's
going to
be going through the list of who's left Bungie in these. Yeah.
Is he just like a normal guy who just like moved on for the company? And so now it's like because of these non-disclosure agreements, like it's almost like backfired because everyone who left Bungie is now going to be looked at like, oh, are you one of those toxic people? Because they can't name who those toxic people were because everyone who works there has to sign a non-disparagement agreement.
Yeah.
So it's like, it's just a crazy thing. Now, we promised some stories. So we actually have some of our own stories here. And now I should preface this by saying, most of the people I work with at Bungie are wonderful. You know, the community team is generally pretty nice to me when DMG isn't roasting me on Twitter. That, you know what I mean? And the people I've met there that I've had to deal with going to events have been super nice to me. Like, I haven't necessarily experienced any, like, overt toxicity or anything like that. But kind of almost going into building off of Mylan Games' story, where they kind of hire this outside YouTuber to help them with this stuff. And then it kind of, like, almost, like, shoo him away. They like don't give him the proper credit. Me and True Vanguard have kind of had that where Bungie actually asked me. I made a beginner guide at one point around Beyond Light. I think it was around Beyond Light. And yeah. Bungie asked me to do this. Said, "Hey, can you make great guides? Can you make a beginner guide when you first start Destiny, going over the New Light experience? And if you do this, we're gonna retweet it. We're gonna do all this stuff." Like, we're going to promote it on our socials. And I was like, oh, man, like, that's a lot of work. And you want that right after Beyond Light. This is going to be a huge expansion. I'm going to be playing all the new stuff, all this crazy stuff, right? I was like, you know, but I wanted to help them out. And I was like, listen, you know, send me a collector's edition of Beyond Light and we're square, right? And they're like, sure. Now, for those of you maybe not in the YouTube industry, like, doing a full dedicated video is worth a heck of a lot more than a collector's edition of Beyond Light. Like, you know what I mean? Like, a full dedicated video is a pretty big deal. But I did it for them. I never got my collector's edition, and they never retweeted, put it on any socials. And it wasn't just me. I think, I don't want to speak out of turn, but there's other YouTubers who were also asked to do these beginner guides, and it never showed up on any socials as far as I'm aware.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I had a similar experience. Again, I'll preface this by saying I've almost exclusively had overwhelmingly positive interactions with the people that I liaison with at Bungie. And a number of them are my friends and are excellent people. But there's a but there. I did have a similar interaction as you, Kakis, where over a year ago, I was contacted by someone at Bungie who said, hey, we would love for you. Trials of Osiris is coming back, baby. We revamped Trials. It's now going to be the Trials of Osiris. And here's all the information about what the playlist is going to be like. And it was a lot to digest, right? I had to understand how everything was going to work and operate. And they said, we need you to make a complete beginner's guide to... Well, then I need. We'd love it if you would make a complete beginner's guide to Trials of Osiris for the PvP community. And it's not for payment, but we will retweet it. We'll share it on our socials. We'll make sure that we get eyes on it because we want people who are new to the experience to understand how the game mode works. And I thought, that sounds great. You know, I had a, I had vivid memories of a time I had been featured on Bungie's website before, and it led to one of the most catalytic growth seasons of my channel's history. And so I was like, if I could get, you know, involved in that again, that'd be great, you know? So who would say no to that? So I said, sure. I worked really hard to make what I thought was a really well fleshed out and intuitive, complete beginner's guide to Trials of Osiris. And it was one of those things, just like Haggis, I didn't see it anywhere. I reached out to him and said, hey, I did it. You know, here it is. Here's the link. And it never got like retweeted or shared or never saw it on any of Bungie's official stuff. And so,
and then, yeah, I know for a fact we're not the only two. Yeah. There's like other YouTubers that were asked to do this as well. So it kind of brings in a question.
I mean, I did one too. I don't think, I don't know if they retweeted. I can't remember if they retweeted it, but I did one too.
But it's like, so it's like, are they just forgetful? It's very possible, especially with the launch of a new DLC. I'll give Bungie, maybe they just forgot. It's just so wild over there. But if they're doing this to like three, at least 5-10 YouTubers, are they potentially just kind of like, I don't want to say manipulating, but like using us to make videos that they want us to make to get new players into their game? And then they're like, eh, whatever. We don't need to retweet it, right? Which is a little, it feels a bit bad. And it, dude, it's like kind of, I feel like, oh, like you're kind of nervous telling these stories because you're almost worried about Bungie being vindictive. I mean, for me, they still don't follow. I have like a million subscribers and all I do is cover Destiny. They still don't follow me on Twitter on like at Bungie or at Destiny 2, like none of that stuff. And I'm always like, see that? I'm like, dude, like, did I do something to like piss them off? You're almost like kind of afraid to like, I mean, obviously I still very much speak my mind about like stuff I don't like. You just got to keep it respectful and like not go Halo Reddit. But you are kind of like, geez, did I say something wrong? Are they like mad that I said something and they're like taking it out on me? And it's just like, it's something that for a company that kind of goes out to try to be so positive, forward facing, again, the internals are not necessarily reflective of that.
I legit, like I'm almost 100% sure I'm legitimately blacklisted now because someone at some company can't, I'm not gonna obviously leak it. They straight up told me a bunch of people after the summit event were very angry at me and they hated my, the way I brought things up and they never want me in there again. Like specifically said, never again. Because, and I did make a video and I was just like, you know, I told them like everything and they came out and they're like, why did you make that video? And I was like, I'm just making a video on how it went and like how it felt and like I stood up for your for the community and like I was there for you going to bat and like I guess we'll see what happens. And I just kind of told my side of it and they're like, well, you made it look like there was like some sort of aggression there or like we weren't collaborative, and they were like pretty mad about that. And I was like, well, some of the devs weren't collaborative. They didn't want to hear what we had to say, like at all. Like some of them completely shut it down. And you know, it almost puts into question or it kind of brings to light the old guard mentality of like, we're just stupid content creators that don't know what's good for the game and all these different things. And
you know, it's like they clearly don't know what's good for the freaking game. They released Destiny 2 Vanilla. That was a disaster. It's like, now it looks like they've kind of finally understood, but that's a perfect example too. It's like sometimes you feel like devs are like upset at your feedback if you don't like their idea. And you're like, yeah, it's not a good idea. So like, what do you want from me?
It's so hard, you know, because, like, I mean, to play devil's advocate, I mean, I have had specific interactions where I've uploaded a video just completely on my own talking about a point of contention that I have with the state of the game, maybe the state of the PvP, and I just kind of, I put it out there and let it go, and there's been a couple of times where I've actually received direct communication from people pretty high up who said, hey, I just wanted to let you know, I had watched your video. I brought it to one of the executive meetings and made a couple of talking points out of it. Just so you know, we really value your feedback. And I made sure that it was brought up, and they didn't have to do that. So,
yeah,
I mean, to their credit, I mean, there's other times where they are exceptional in that. So it's like, I think it really just depends on who is it that's handling the feedback.
No, you're right. That's a great devil's advocate. Like we're giving the worst examples. Mm-hmm. Most of the time we don't have, like, if I'm invited to an event and we gather feedback, I've had plenty of times where the devs seemed very receptive to feedback. Oh, like, why would you do that? Well, because of this. Oh, yeah, that kind of makes sense. Yeah, you know what I mean? Like, it all depends on, like, who you're talking to. And again, it's like, if you have, like, a couple of, like, those old guard people running a summit, maybe you will get that summit, maybe will be influenced by them in a negative way. It's and with all this coming to light, it's just kind of an interesting kind of thing to collaborate the stories at IGN.
Yeah, for sure. Do we want to keep hitting on Bungie, or do we want to move on to some of the other topics now?
I think
36 minutes in? Yeah, let's go.
I think we're good. I think we're good.
Let's go.
I just want to end with, can we just say, like, listen, obviously, this is bad. Bungie needs to get better, right? And especially, like, get better internally. Stop talking about how good you are on Twitter. Because you're obviously not that, you know what I mean? Like, it needs to happen in the studio first, and then tell us about it, right? Mm-hmm. Like, don't have such a high turnover rate and then brag about, like, hiring people. Make sure you have a solid studio first and a great work environment, and then come out and say this. I just, like, that's the thing that annoys me, is, like, we say one thing, but we don't actually do it.
I guess one quick thing also before we go is, like, we talked a little bit about crunch and, like, bad workplace environment, and I saw a lot of different game devs recently, even from Bungie, they were, like, tweeting out their salary and stuff. It seems like maybe there is some sort of push for, like, unionization in gaming of, like, if this is your title, this is what you get paid, and, like, some sort of union to protect the people. I wonder if that will be something that happens in the near future, because especially if crunch is continuing to go on and people are not getting paid fairly for the hours they're putting in, people are getting promised, like, with Borderlands, you guys are going to get a big bonus, and then they don't get paid the bonus. It just disappears.
Or the Fallout New Vegas, they were promised bonus if it got, like, an 85 on Metacritic, and it got, like, an 84. And so they missed all their bonuses. It's like, bruh.
You're not going to give me a percentage of the bonus? Like,
exactly.
Yeah. It's absolutely crazy. Nick Brill with $139.99. That's $99 US. Thank you so much, Nick. This is a crazy episode. We're popping off here. But the topics are still flowing.
We got to move on. We're done with Halo. Bungie. We're glad that they're getting better, though. Things are looking up. Like, that's a good thing. It's not the Activision thing where, like, things are going nowhere. Things are looking like they're improving, which is good.
Things are not looking up for the Sentinels.
Yes.
Who are a competitive team.
It's kind of a crazy story.
In Halo. So this is actually a really interesting story to me. I was really enjoying reading up on this one. So you have Royal 2, who's a member of the Sentinels pro team in the Halo scene. And not too long ago, just a couple weeks ago, they had a tournament, okay? And basically, I remember seeing this in real time unfold on Twitter, where people who were participating in the tournament were saying, listen, man, congrats to the Sentinels and Royal 2 on their victory. They won the tournament, right? Congrats to them. But but something was up, man. I don't know if it was the ping. Our ping to those servers was so bad. It hasn't been bad in any of our other matches. It's been always on a specific server in Texas, because that's, you know, the whole, almost everyone in the Halo scene is either Midwest or Central time. And so everyone's going to this Texas server for these competitive matches. And they're like, man, something was up. Playing against them, Royal 2 was shooting us through walls, around corners, and through solid cover. Like, there were just a lot of things that we couldn't react. It didn't matter how good we were just going to die. And it was a really frustrating experience for us. Now, enough players complained about one specific team, one specific player, that 343 decided to launch an official investigation. And what they found was really interesting. What they found is that only with this team, they were, the matches were migrating from this server in Texas all the way up towards Seattle, where Royal 2 is close to. Okay? So he's, you know, top-seeded pro player, and now he's literally the only person in the lobby with exceptional ping. Now let me ask you something. If you've got, you know, 8 players in a match and one person on one team has exceptional connectivity to the server, how big of a difference do you think it's going to make at the pro level? Well, enough that this team won the tournament. And so 343 said, listen, whether it's intentional or not, in order to make that happen, some tampering's got to happen, right? And so we're going to fine them, and, you know, he can't participate in, you know, these events moving forward. But it's just a temporary thing. Like, he'll be back in the pro scene very shortly. But a lot of the Halo community was really upset about this because the guy looked, Royal 2 looked really guilty. You know why? Because as soon as the tournament was over, the guy goes and deletes his VODs from the last 3 days. And coincidentally, the internal investigations revealed that only for the previous 3 days were they playing on this server. And you can see it on their screen when they're playing, you know, what their ping is and what server they're on. And so basically the visual evidence of the fact that they were on this other server was just erased. And so if you're innocent, that's a really strange thing to do. Mm-hmm. And so anyways, whether it was intentional or not, it definitely was beneficial for the team. They won the tournament, and
the perfect crime would have been to stream with copyright music, so then Twitch would have taken down the bars, right?
There you go.
And it's like, it's not my fault. It was the music, dude. That's like 4D chess right there. But
and like when it first came out, though, it was like people were like, oh my god, a Halo pro cheated? Like, why would he do that? And it's like, it's not like he was using an aim bot, but the servers were getting manipulated, and that's, you know, that's not okay. Like, obviously, they're are ping issues there. And I mean, I've complained many times about the ping in the game. Like, I there's one of the reasons I'm not playing Halo. I posted a video on Twitter where a guy sniped me through a pillar, and I'm like, okay, I guess I'm getting tagged by that sniper and have one HP now. And so imagine that at the pro level, how frustrating that would be if it's happening over and over and over again.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of one of those things. Like, I mean, obviously all the recency stuff going on. I don't want to say it because YouTube will demonetize us, but used to just have a LAN tournament. Everyone meet at one location and we have the tournament here. Mm-hmm. You didn't have these server issues. And so this is something that, like, as long as they have these online things, like online tournaments, it's going to matter. And it's like, it's getting to the point where, like, are they going to have to, like, address it? You know what I mean? Like, they don't want to admit that depending on where the server is, one team gets a huge advantage, because then obviously the players are going to be like, wait a minute, doesn't that mean like I would get a huge disadvantage or advantage if I'm playing pubs based on where the server is? And it's like, yup. Like,
right.
Like, game companies don't want to admit that because it's a bag of worms, or a can of worms, right? But it's like, at some point, they might need to be like, okay, we have one match where the server is as close as possible to one team, and the other match where the server is as close as possible to the other team, and the third match where we can find one in the middle or something like that, right? And whoever wins that tournament, like, having a single place is going to screw over, like, certain people, and then it just opens it for manipulation and all this stuff.
Okay, I'll give you a really good example, and, like, you can send it to Shroud if you want to. Like, I'm not roasting Shroud. It's nothing to do with him. Shroud is a god-tier aimer. He's a tournament player. He's won in multiple games. He is an amazing shooter. He's a better player than I am. But if you go look at footage from me playing PUBG back in the day and then look at his footage, we were not playing the same game. He could run into a building and go, bop, 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 pick up every item, equip them, have them in the inventory, and I would walk over an ammo thing and, like, try to drag it in my inventory, and it wouldn't connect. There were so many server issues in my game compared to him. I would watch his streams and I go, no shit, he's better than everyone. If he runs into a weapon, he picks it up before them every time. He's got like 2 ping because he lives, I think he's in Texas, I'm not sure. But like wherever he was sitting beside the server. And I'm watching and I'm like, that doesn't even look like my gameplay. The way he's looting everything, I literally cannot do that. So no wonder he's the best player in the game, because he is an amazing aimer. But he's his game, like, he has an absolute guaranteed verifiable advantage over, I guarantee, most people in the world. And so, but, you know,
anyone in Canada.
Yeah, I live in Canada.
There's no such thing as Canada servers. We get the, like, North America servers. They
move on
they,
down, man. Come
game
on.
Game devs, they just have one big thing in North America and they say, it's the USA and the servers are down here.
And here's the, like, thing, too. Like, I know I'm going on a bit of a tangent, but, like, it's the advantages. I know that I'm a very good Destiny player. I know it. But I 1v1, like, Frostbolt and Sir Demetrius. and I got roasted. Like, I did. Are they better players than me? Absolutely. But if you go back and look at the footage from my angle, they're shooting, they're tagging me once with their hand cannon before they're on my screen. So obviously, ping for me in Canada is dog meat on Destiny as well. Yeah. And so it's like, I never know how good I am at shooter games because I've been dealing with this. And I, how many times have I complained about Valorant where I'm shooting them first and it says that I hit them twice? Like, I've complained about Valorant all the time. It's to the point where, as a content creator, I am looking at shooter games less now than I ever have. Because if you want to be the best...
Because you have a disadvantage.
I have a disadvantage. I 100% have a disadvantage.
Yeah.
So...
Yeah, it's unfortunate. Like, especially, like, if you live... Like, God forbid, you live in, like, the Yukon or, like, Northwest Territories and you want to all play some Halo. Good luck, dude. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Like, honestly, and, like, if you're a streamer, you should move to Texas to, like, yeah, to, like, be on those servers.
There's a consideration, obviously, it's like, hey, if you're a game company, like, you can't run servers in Nunavut, right? It's like, that's just impractical. But, like, a couple of servers throughout, like, Canada, like, server centers, and it's one of those things where, like, maybe there'll be a company that has a brainwave, like EA or, you know, one of these big companies, and they'll do it, and, like, multiple games can use it. We have a server center throughout Canada, you know what I mean? Like, BC, Alberta, Saskatchewan/Manitoba, probably right in the middle of those guys. And then, like, just because it's getting to the point where, like, these games are mattering. And, like, when you're putting on these $100,000, $50,000 tournaments, suddenly, when you were playing Modern Warfare 2 with your boys, you know, just out of school, hey, meet me on Modern Warfare 2, you know what I mean? A bad connection would be fine. But now it's like gaming has become so much more serious. I mean, you can make a living on it. You can win a lot of money. People are looking into things like ping, like, substantially more. And so it's like companies are going to have to account for that. Or people are just going to be frustrated and not play their game.
Mm-hmm. No, absolutely. And, you know, Twitch Rivals tournaments, $50,000 on the line. It's like, if you're a streamer and you want to be competitive, it's like, take the competitive advantage and move where the game servers are. Like, that's the thing.
Literally.
If you're looking at some of the PUBG streamers or the Apex Legends streamers, that is honestly like a business decision you could consider long-term, is like moving to some of these places. I think I would be a better player. I know I would be a better player, and I know I'd be able to compete at a higher level than I do, because it is like visually obvious how many times ping issues come into play for my gameplay. And it's killed my competitive drive. I have no urge to compete at a high level because I know for a fact someone will shoot me before I can see them or tag me before I can get behind cover, even though it looks like it on my screen.
It's a big enough issue that the other teams in the Halo competitive scene literally came out and said, 343, we will not participate in the tournaments if the Sentinels and... You know, if they're there, we're not participating. We're not going to play them. We won't play them. That's how bad it was when you got people at the professional level who are contracted with guaranteed money to do this are saying, I draw the line there. You know what I'm saying? And then you have, like, even Snipedown came out with, he posted a video on his YouTube channel, and he's like, I really, really value the integrity of competitive gaming. All right? What, you know, whether that's petty or not, I don't know, but... It's really important to me. And they breached the integrity of the competitive scene in Halo. And there's no room for that. We can't have that.
But just like how these Halo pros, the Sentinels, have killed their goodwill, Microsoft apparently killed off a studio. So, TV, you can take this story away here.
Yeah, this is an interesting one. This is an interesting one because I actually really love the Fable series. Any of you guys ever play the Fable series?
Yep.
Fable
1, Fable 2? Yeah, I played Fable 1 and 2. Ooh.
2 was classics. So good, man. Such a great series.
Such a great
the
game.
The ending, though, was the worst ending I think I've ever seen.
No,
for
yeah.
For 3 or 2?
For 2. For 2. It's old enough now. You shoot the guy at the very end. Like, there's no final boss. You just shoot the guy in the top of the tower.
It was really about, like, being mean to someone, like, early on. And then, like, something you'd, like, see them later. They'd be like, I don't know how big you. And you're a kid. You're like, that's so crazy. They remember me, right?
Yeah. It's just like, yeah. I don't know. Anyways, continue.
The game franchise, the Fable franchise had a lot of support. People loved it. So much so that Microsoft saw some value in Lionheart Studios. They're like, let's buy them, and then we'll own the Fable name, you know, like they've done with a number of other titles, right? So they bought Lionheart. And
Lionhead.
Lionhead. I'm sorry, I keep saying Lionheart. Lionhead. And so then the plan there was to integrate them with their Kinect stuff that they had going on at the time. I don't know. It didn't take.
Yeah,
It didn't take, and it wasn't working. And so basically, they just kind of dismantled the studio. Well, that was obviously bad news for people who were fans of the Fable series, who were looking forward to a new title in the series. And Microsoft, just this past week, they were in an interview. I think it's like a mini documentary series that they were a part of. But they addressed that, and they're like, we learned from the Lionhead situation. Basically, what we did is we saw a studio that was doing something really well, and we said, let's buy them and then ask them to do what we want to do well. And what we should have done is said, we want to buy them and then help empower them to continue to do what they do well. So it was like a thing where they tried to buy somebody who was doing something great and get them on board with their vision and their goals and their projects, when what they should have been doing was saying, these guys are doing some great work. Let's buy them. We want them to be under our umbrella. We'll fund their work, make sure they can just even continue to push past their own limits and make amazing products in their wheelhouse. That's what they should have done. And they admitted that, which I think was big of them. But it really is a big bummer that the Fable franchise had to sort of die. Now, I mean, to be fair, a new Fable title is in the works, but it's not the same people. It's not the same studio. It's the same name, but it's the people who make Forza, you know, it's Playground. And it, like, to be fair, they do a really good job with the games they make, but it's not RPG fantasy games. So I hope they crush it. They are making it on the same engine as the recent Forza game, which looks beautiful, you know, to be fair. So hopefully they do great with it. But racing, I thought that was just an interesting story.
Racing and Fable.
Yeah, that's right.
I hope they nail the new one. I truly do.
Sorry, I'm just trying to look up who the heck did the reshoots of Justice League. Joss Whedon. It's like, that's a good example of that. Justice League, remember they had the Justice League and it flopped, and then they like came out later and they had the Zack Snyder cut, which was his original vision, and it got a lot of praise for doing well. This is kind of like what Microsoft used to do. They brought in Joss Whedon to like, they like had the Justice League and they're like, well, let's make this more like Marvel. And it's like, Marvel makes Marvel movies, guys. Like, Marvel's going to be the best at making Marvel movies, right? You have to do your own thing. And that's kind of like the Fable situation. You're exactly right. It's like, hey, you guys are great. We love what you're doing. But we're just going to do it our way now. And it's like, no, dude, let them keep doing what they do best. Like, you know, if they had let Zack Snyder make his original Justice League, his original vision, I guarantee that movie would have done better. It may not have been perfect, but it would have done better than the like cut down changed version, right? Mm-hmm. So you have to let someone with the original vision do what they're good at doing. Like, otherwise don't hire them. Like you said, why buy Fable just to change them? Like, what was the point? You could buy any studio and just make them do what you want to do, or just hire new people to your existing studios.
True. 100%. Let's move on to really quickly the Game Awards. The Game Awards is a bunch of trailers and a couple cringy things here and there.
not too bad on the cringe, though. Like, I feel for a game show, pretty good.
I feel like not a ton of announcements. It was more like trailers on stuff I already knew was coming. There were some announcements, but I didn't feel like I was super wowed. I just got more excited for a few of those things. Like Tiny Tina, you know, Elden Ring, some of those other things. It was like
the Destiny trailer was great too.
Yeah, the Destiny trailer showed some more stuff, which is definitely cool. So, it was fine. Was there any standout games for you guys that you're like, wow?
Did you try that Matrix game?
Yeah. Okay. That looks.
Insane. That was pretty fun. Like,
it was like a tech demo, though. It wasn't really like a game.
Yeah, it was a tech demo, but it was really cool. It was really cool. I was happy that they did that. And one of my good buddies got really into it. He's like, this is awesome.
What's the game with the person, the Viking person? They're fighting the giant baby.
The Viking person. They're fighting the giant baby.
You're fighting this giant, like, Helen. It's like
God of War?
Is it Hellblade? It's like
Sinua's sacrifice.
They go, yeah, maybe they go into this like thing, and there's like a giant, there's a giant, and they like fight him, and it's like, this is all gameplay. I was like, that looks sweet, dude. I can't remember. I can't think of it. But another game that looks sweet. Shout out to Ark Raiders. Ark Raiders sponsor me. But really surprising, actually. It's like a third person shooter. They're fighting these like alien drones, like all robot drones. And like, obviously there's like some small ones. I think it was Hellblade 2 anyway. But there's like some small ones, and then there's like bigger ones, and then there's like huge like walker drones. And what really caught my attention was it said it was like a MMO co-op shooter. Like, I was like, what? Or like maybe not MMO, but like online co-op. It was just like a completely co-op experience where you go in with your friends and like try to like fight these crazy giant robotic aliens. And I was like, this looks freaking sweet. Like I'd be really down to play as like a, you know, like a PvE mainly player. That really caught my attention.
It was giving me like Monster Hunter vibes, kind of like with kind the big of. Robots.
But yeah. Then like you can play with your friends, which is super sweet. I'm not sure if it has like a looting aspect. I think there like loot was like mentioned, but then it also has like a, almost like a arcadey like 80s vibe. Like the Ark Raiders is very stylized, has like very bright in color, like their logo. So I'm like kind of trying to understand the vibe of this game. It just seems like wild.
Yeah.
I don't know. I didn't watch it the day of. I was coaching some hockey, and then I watched some of the trailers, but like my hype level is about where it was. Like, I'm a little bit more hyped about a few things. There's some, like, indie games like Hollow Knight, Silksong, like the new Hollow Knight game, more indie. There's a bunch that I want to play just for me. I don't plan on streaming it or covering it. Good news is Genshin Impact won Best Mobile Game, and they gave us some free Primo Gems and a couple memes along the way.
This poor person, I think it was a woman, right? She looked at this thing, obviously didn't know what Genshin Impact was, and was like, what the hell? Like, what
I'm
is
feeling ill prepared.
What is, well, I don't know when I called it like Genshin or like, I was like, what is this word? What is this? What
I remember the Genshin first time you mean? Talked about it was Genshin
yeah,
Impact.
I was like, whoa, you see this word? I'm like, I am notoriously bad. I can't give
you
this
still
woman
can't
any slack.
Say Bobby Kotick's name right.
I say Bobby Kovic. Every time I called the Syntheseps, I called them the Syncocepts for the longest time. I still sometimes, for the Elixni, I call them the Elsinki. Still sometimes I call them the Elsinki.
Hey, do you have dyslexia?
The Omnioculus, I call it the Omunculus, whatever.
Omunculus.
Came up.
You called that sniper
I'm
the
so
Adorned.
Bad.
Too, for the longest time.
The Adorned, yeah, and it's the Adored. Oh my gosh, dude. Maybe I do have dyslexia, honestly. It's getting pretty bad but for the mispronunciations, but I do my best.
Let's move on quickly to the Battlefield stuff. So Battlefield cutting some of the lobbies down in half, you're kind of saying it's almost like a beta test for how the maps will perform with less people on it.
It's the whole Battlefield story is so interesting to me. And maybe it's because I'm still playing the game. I do. I still play the game almost every day. I'm pretty hooked on it when I'm not swamped with work. But so one of the things they've done is they did like this week where they had like a sort of featured playlist. You know how Bungie has these featured playlists in Destiny sometimes? Well, they did a similar thing where they cut the lobbies down from 128 players down to 64. They cut them in half.
Is this, PlayStation 4? Like,
yeah, that's right. And so they did that for PC and next-gen consoles. And everyone was like, no, don't let it go away. It's good. It's good. So if you're not familiar with the game, it's typically 128 players on these maps. It's really, it can get really crowded in certain places. Like, imagine your objective point is to push a rooftop. And that rooftop
and
only has 3 points of entry.
Yeah, two.
But there's four.
Like ladders.
But there's, you know, anywhere between like 40 and 60 people on that rooftop with three
pointing
entry
down,
points.
Looking down the ladder, like, bro, come up. Like,
so you'll open up the doors to the elevator with your gun, like, what's going on?
God.
And they've literally airdropped a tank.
And
then sitting
right
there, looking right at the elevator, and they get like six kills, you know?
Yeah.
And it's just dumb. So anyways, they thought maybe it would help alleviate some of the pressures of the way that these maps play out. if they cut these lobbies in half, a lot of the players said, hey, please keep these changes. These are really good. So they said, you know what? We'll bite. We'll bite on that. Well, we're going to extend it. So right now, if you fire up Battlefield 2042 and you're in the All Out Warfare playlist, you have the option to play the game mode that is just 64 players on these maps. And so you have a little more space to work with, you know? And most players are really responding really well to it. So I wonder how much the game is going to continue to change from its original vision and then start to just come more in line with what the community who loves Battlefield really expects from the game.
I feel like I wouldn't like that, though. Like, I'm not going to cap. I like 128 players. It's wild. You throw a grenade and get 10 kills. Like, you absolutely go around the corner and you see, like, literally 20 people all facing a different direction. You're like, oh my gosh. Like, this is wild. Yeah. So, I kind of like the chaos. And Battlefield has always been a chaotic game, right? Also, these maps were kind of a little bit more designed. Dude, I play Breakthrough. So, like, there's Conquest where you have the whole map open, you go to the different maps. I play Breakthrough, so it doesn't even let you go to the whole map. You have like one small area where all 128 players are fighting over, and then that's how you get level up fast. You throw those sensor grenades and you get like a 17,000 experience. So to me, I wouldn't like that, but it's good that they provide like the choice, because there are certainly some maps that are like poorly designed. Any the objectives from the top of the roofs have got to change,
because
the only way you can conquer those is you need a good pilot, and good pilots, they're like the white whale, right? You're a friend of a friend told you that he had a good pilot. You know what I mean? That's the only word you've ever heard of them. Your pilots are just smashing into buildings at 300 miles an hour. You're like, or like you spawn into it, the helicopter's already upside down. You're like, this doesn't look right. And it just crashes.
Like, dude, I'm like level 70. And to this day, I have only seen a rooftop objective taken one time.
Yeah.
One time. And we're talking, I've probably got, I don't know, maybe 200 hours in the game already.
Dude. It's like you have a short window. You're good. You have to have a good pilot. You have to get him right away. Because otherwise, I was defending a rooftop one time, and one of my squad mates dropped an anti-air tank on the roof. So the poor helicopter pilots that were trying to get to us, the guy's like, all right.
Yeah, that's right.
Goodbye.
Jeez. It's like, did you actually play test this? Because I feel like there's no way in heck that you did.
Literally. There's like,
there's anyone. No way.
Anyone who plays this would be like, you can't capture this rooftop. Man, like, there's just no way.
Man, so. Mr. Johnny with one thumb and just his middle finger can defend that rooftop, no problem.
Exactly, exactly. All right. Now, what we're going to do here, we're going to move on from the topics. And we're going to go to RGH After Dark.
Don't do that in my ear ever again. That was terrible.
Well, before we get into After Dark, we should probably thank our one and only sponsor so far. Which is Advanced GG.
Hey, we had other sponsors.
The best, our only sponsor currently. this is Advanced GG, the best and only clinically proven gaming supplement out there. It's fantastic. I've been drinking tons of Advanced GG, like this past couple week with the 30th anniversary. The only reason I've been able to pump out as much content as I have is because of Advanced GG. Like, I would be sleeping like through all of it. I mean, so Advanced GG has absolutely kept me going there. So use code RGH and you get 10% off, and you support all three of us. And by that I mean it goes to an offshore bank account that MTash is in charge of, and we've never seen a penny of it. So
that's not true. I got my payout. Yeah, I did. Did you not get yours? I got my payout. I was like, oh, money. Cool. I don't remember my children.
Yeah, well, until you walked by the local liquor store on the way, and then
you make me sound like I have a problem.
Bottle of Whistle Pig looks really good.
You really do make me sound like I've literally had people in the comment section are like, I'm starting to worry that TV is an alcoholic. It's like, guys,
and not just an alcoholic, a
two
fat
to three
alcoholic.
Nights a week, I have a 4 ounce beverage. I was cool.
Hey, TV, an out of shape alcoholic too. Actually,
he's really letting himself.
He's really letting himself go. I was just happy. I slipped away from that. Apparently, he didn't. Must have been off when he saw me. Like, I was like, ooh, yikes, dodging that one.
Well, you better start getting fit so you're ready for Hawaii. Because
honestly, dude, like it's bad. But let's get on to this RGH After Dark topic. So this is where we let you guys ask us any questions. and we try to answer them. Obviously, priority is given to our lovely members, so thank you guys who have re-upped your memberships to help pay for the editor and so on.
Thank you to The Last Word, who dropped that $50 dono, by the way. Really appreciate that generous donation.
Yeah, one day we're going to finally have a YouTube short that does well on this platform. We're getting close. I feel like they're edited really good.
If it's you just, see those and you like those, hey, feel free to share.
Give them a like, please.
Give some sort of interaction on those, and that's really helpful.
Also, this guy, Gorgnak? Gorgnak?
Gorionic.
Gorionic? I have no... I'm going to start this off. He says, Mike and Rick, quick question. Why do they call Canadian bake... What do they call Canadian bacon in Canada? We sometimes just call it ham in the States. So basically, Canadian bacon is like back bacon. It's just like, it's not even really, I don't know who called it bacon. Like, there's like a misconception that like Canadians don't eat American style bacon or like normal bacon. We eat Canadian bacon.
Yeah, no one eats Canadian bacon. No one eats back bacon. Like, it's like,
I've had it. Like, it's healthier than normal bacon, but it's like not, it's not that common. Like, you can have it. It goes good with Eggs Benedict. Yeah. But, like, we still eat normal bacon way more than, like, Canadian bacon.
Oh, it's like a 95% ratio of just,
literally,
like,
yeah. It's not common here. Even we're like, who the heck is eating this Canadian bacon? Weirdos.
Anyone tried the Oculus Quest 2 other than Resident Evil 4 and the Beat Saber games? Any recommendations? I haven't done a lot of the VR Oculus stuff. Or VR stuff. And the only game I've played is Beat Saber. I love Beat Saber. It's a good time.
Yeah.
Ripping around.
My wife loves the Oculus. She plays, and she lets me play sometimes too. Beat Saber for sure. And then also, I forget the name of it, but it's like a Darth Vader Star Wars game where you end up kind of working alongside Darth Vader and you do like lightsaber duels. It's pretty cool.
Oh, I like that one that's, what is it, Ultra Hot or...
Super hot,
and it's like if you don't move, time slows down, and then you can like grab the guns, and you can grab a bottle and throw it at someone. That game was pretty damn fun overall, but mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know how long that game stays fun. I'm really curious when VR will take off. It just always feels janky to me,
and also
it never feels good.
Also, if it's like sometimes you want to sit down and relax on a couch, you don't have to like hook up this thing and like clear out your entire room behind you and stuff.
Yeah, I really think VR, the future of VR is really in the experiences, not necessarily the interactive gaming stuff. I mean, like there's some interactive stuff somewhere. That's really interesting. That's exactly right. So a lot of the more popular downloads for things like the Oculus and whatnot are really experiences, places you can go, sites you can see. Hey, I want to see what the Roman Colosseum is like, but I don't want to travel. You know? And so you wear it and you see it through somebody else's experience. And I think that's really the future of VR. Is experiencing things that you don't get to experience. And there's a wide variety of things that fall into that category. But I'm not sure that interactive gaming is something that's, I don't know, until VR technology elevates its game considerably, I don't think it's the future of gaming right now.
Here's my input on that. If they try to use the controls, it will never take off unless they perfect them. The only VR game I see taking off is you've got the headset on, you're sitting in your chair, but you can just like look around and it's a very like visual and audio well done experience, but you have a controller and it's just like an immersively beautiful world. You know, you look up while you're playing Monster Hunter World and you're right underneath the, you know, the monster and you feel that. I think that would be the only way it really takes off where it's like, why would you play on a TV? But there's motion sickness and like all sorts of other stuff, but the controls, those little hands trying to grab all the items, and it's always like jittering around.
I know.
Like,
and you swear see the to gameplay, God. It's like your hands like this. And
yeah,
like,
it's always you're,
like,
jittering.
It and, just... and then it's like you're like dropping it or like.
Dude, yeah. I play. So I'm a diehard Phasmophobia enthusiast. I play that game like probably three nights.
We gotta
a
play
week.
At some point. We gotta do like a Phasmophobia RGH.
My wife is like run. A level. She just passed level 1,000 this week in that game. We played so much.
Literally,
but. But can when we... you have somebody in the lobby playing VR, it's the goofiest looking game. You're somebody, you're like trying to ghost hunt, and you look over at your buddy and he's like,
you have like this object, you're like, let me grab it. And then the VR guy's like,
yeah.
And he like finally like grabs it, and then he's like, look looks what I like found. Yeah, and his hands like
his bones are broken in 12
Look what
places.
I found.
It's a shame you aren't watching this live if you're listening to this in your car, because the hand motions that I just witnessed are a sight to see. That was incredible.
Dude, that's what they look
it
like.
Was, it was like characters. I was there in the game. My God.
Like you were literally experiencing VR.
Yep.
Someone did ask what I was drinking tonight. Was the is a drink called the Monte Cassino. It's a nod to the Benedictine order. Actually, it's a really cool drink, but it follows the last word template, where it's equal parts citrus juice, two liqueurs, and a base spirit. So it's like 100 proof rye with lemon juice, Benedictine, and yellow chartreuse. Delicious.
Will the metaverse take over the world? I think 0%. I think it's 0%. Because number one is like, who is going to spend more time in the metaverse than normal life? Wow. Two is like, how much time in that metaverse are you going to spend and get meaning out of it? Like, what are you doing in the metaverse? How big is this
spreading
metaverse? Like,
conspiracy theories.
There's just so many things that go on there. It's like, is it going to be a game with things to do? Or are you just going to be sitting around talking around? Is it going to be a city that you can explore and find things? Like, I just don't know where that goes to the point where it overtakes society and becomes, like, widely adopted. Everyone's plugged into the metaverse. It's like they go home and they're plugging into the metaverse.
You'd have to have, like, haptic feedback, like, fabrics where you could, like, feel stuff and like, you have to be in like a weightless environment to like actually move around. It would be insane. Like if they achieved that, you could go into like a pod and truly control your character or something like that.
Right.
Maybe. But like other than that, I don't know.
If you could somehow do your like remote job in the game, like while you're there, you could just do all your functions in your made up world. Like maybe. But no. I just don't see
it. It just seems like a new way for like crypto bros to like sell stuff and merch. Also get rich. In fairness, get insanely rich. But
I have a friend that I played hockey with. He's made like over $5 million off NFTs. And like obviously some of that's luck, but he just bought a penthouse in Kelowna. Like he legitimately multimillionaire because of NFTs and Ethereum and all that. And it's like amazing for sure. But like, what about the other people that are bag holding on a lot of these like scam coins and like all this? And like, did you guys see the Ubisoft courts? They just did an announcement. It had 1,000 likes, 25,000 dislikes. And they're like, yeah, in our new shooter game, you can earn these cosmetics and you get an NFT of it and you can sell it. And one of the NFTs is 600 hours of gameplay. And so it's like, people are just going to farm that. They're going to like have a bot running the whole time, get it, and then try to sell it. And what is that achieving? And, you know, that's the crazy thing is like everyone's like, well, they've got these non-fungible tokens and you know, you have that ownership. If they shut down the game servers, they shut down the game servers. You're not going to use that thing. Like you don't have control over that asset forever the way they make it sound. Unless they're contractually and governmentally forced to keep the servers on indefinitely.
I think it might go beyond like servers because there's like a special like address that they can tell that you're the owner. But it's also like...
But if you can't even play the game, why would it have any value
This is a whole different like debate. Yeah. Like it's one of those things where it's like, I think they're kind of dumb, but I can't say that they're dumb. Because your friend made $5 million and you just bought a pen. I didn't buy a penthouse. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So clearly the people who are well-researched and doing NFTs and the coins and stuff right are making bank. But we should say like a lot of people are not making bank, and there's quite a lot of like almost like survivorship bias where you look, maybe not survivorship bias, but bias where you look at the people who have succeeded massively and you think you can do it too. The best example of that, freaking stock market, dude. I'm like, dude, everyone's getting free money with GameStop. Right. Turns out harder than you think to make money on the stock market, you know?
The thing is like, are NFTs in games going to solve? Like no. look at what CSGO is doing in the skin sales there. Like, obviously there is people that want to buy and sell skins, but there's ways to do that you don't need NFT technology, really. Like, I don't know. I don't know if it's like this next-gen thing.
I think you said it best when it's like, okay, is this NFT going to like improve the game, or is it just gonna be like I'm farming and not even having fun to get these NFTs to try to get money?
Right. Yeah. Like, are you treating it like a job where you're playing it as a job, or are you getting the NFT as a bonus? Like, if I go back in the day playing RuneScape, and like if my PC while I was playing RuneScape for the thousands of hours that I played, if it was slowly mining or something like that, and I got paid, pog. Like, if there was something there, like, if me playing the game made the servers run better, like, something, cool. And I get rewarded for it, cool. I would love it. If somehow me playing Destiny for 4,000 hours got me some money out of it, I mean, sweet. It just, it's this unknown thing, and I don't know. I have a hard time.
Become a content creator, then playing games will generate income.
Fair.
It's that simple.
Fair. So all you got to
That's another good example, right? How many people are like, I'm going to be a content creator.
I'm going to
do
that,
2 years later, no one watches you, and you're like, this sucks, right?
Yeah.
You're like, I can be the next ninja. Like, no, you can't. All right. Like, I'll tell you, like,
there's a lot of factors to success that are completely out of your control.
And like, you know, ninja went and buys a penthouse. Doesn't mean you can get the money to buy a penthouse. Like, there's so many tiers of it. There's like, so a lot of, I think there's a lot of people looking at just the success stories and not the people that lost all their money on Squidcoin because it was like a scam. Right. So
I also feel like with content creation though, like, there's obviously, there's the bias of, like, the success stories, and, like, I could want to be like them. But I think there's also the bias of, like, the guy that's been grinding for 5 years has amazing quality and he just never made it. I feel like that story gets painted a lot, but it's, like, in actuality, that person that's been doing it for 5 years with amazing quality who just never got discovered, that is an anomaly. The fact of the matter is most people are dog meat at content creation. Some of the worst content you'll ever see. Why would you ever watch it bad? But they won't accept that. They're like, oh, it's impossible to make it. And it's like, I don't know. And I'm just going to give you an example. True Vanguard right down below me. Him, me, Hovey, the Jez, Fallout Plays, Aztecross at one point or another all had like a tiny amount of followers. Almost all of us at the same time. And all of us consistently posted, consistently had good content, and all of us succeeded. And, like, are we the niche that sees it? But, like, the thing is when I was bigger, I saw Fallout Plays posting when he was really small, and I was like, that guy's going to make it. Like, I could just see it. His quality was so good, it's like, he's going to make it. All he has to do is continue. And if you go back and look, there's a DM to Fallout Plays, a DM to Azacross, there's a DM to Sir Demetrius, there's a DM to all sorts of people that I've talked to that I saw coming up, and I was like, you have to keep going. Like, you don't understand how close you are.
Like, you've got what it takes.
And they popped off.
You're going to break through that ceiling, and things are going to change dramatically for you, yeah.
And it's like, it's like they're the outliers that make really, really good content, but there's also a ton of people that are just awful. Just awful.
But then they get mad, and they make YouTube delete the dislikes.
Yeah, fair, fair.
Christopher Sharp had a good question. He said, as a content creator, do you still have the same enjoyment out of gaming on your own downtime?
Absolutely not. No. No shot. Because you just feel like you're like, why the hell am I playing this other game? I could be playing Destiny. I could be making content.
I could be making money. Yeah. It's interesting. Yeah. That's the interesting thing about content creation is that you are in control of every factor, right? There's no boss above you that says, this is how many hours we expect out of you a week. And this is how much you're going to get paid for those hours. As a content creator, and this does apply to other different types of revenue sources as well for other people out there. It's not just a content creator exclusive issue. But as a content creator, you're always thinking, during this time, if I chose to do this thing, I could generate more revenue. Like, there's always that thought. When I'm sitting down and having dinner with my family, if I was downstairs editing another video or a YouTube short or streaming right now, I'd be racking up more subscriptions and donations. I'd be generating revenue. Like, there's no one above you that's saying this is the cutoff, right? So every moment of your day is a potential to generate revenue. And every moment that you aren't doing that, you do have to sort of come to terms with that choice that you're spending your time elsewhere during that time. So I mean, I had to put strict boundaries early on in my career, you know, talking with my wife, saying, okay, these are the boundaries we're gonna set for content creation. And, you know, I had to come to terms with that. Sometimes I fully understand there's months where I could have made two or three times more than I did, but I chose not to because there were other things that I thought were going to be more important. And part of that is my social gaming time. So a lot of times in the evenings, I'm doing social gaming with my wife and our two best friends. And I do everything I can to make sure that I enjoy that time. And that it's a lot easier now as I'm, you know, almost a decade into content creation. But early on, it was a challenge because you're always thinking about what you could be doing, you know, and try, how do I optimize my gameplay here to make sure that it's something I can monetize. So anyways, that's my two cents.
And I play it when I do game, it's stuff very different from what I cover. It's like Path of Exile or like indie games, like roguelike games that I would never cover and I just enjoy for myself. But most of the games I cover, I never play. I know for a fact, though, that I realize a game is going to fail very quickly and it kills the enjoyment for me. Like New World. Yep. Yeah. I was having fun, and then I was like, oh no, this economy system. And then I was like, oh no, this end game loop. And oh no, the balance of this. Oh no. And then it killed the game for me within like 4 or 5 days. I had so much fun early on, and then I realized all the problems, and I was like, yeah, the game's going to die. I know it's going to die. And I stopped enjoying it almost instantly. And
yeah,
and like I could feel all my friends were still playing. Like I know I was playing a bunch of like Fruit and our editor Joey and stuff. Like every day we were jumping on. And then I stopped playing as much, and I was like, yeah, guys, I'm quitting. And they're like, what, really? And it's like, I wish I still enjoyed it, right? Yeah, and then, you know, everyone else started quitting too. And so, I mean, unfortunately as well, I do treat YouTube and Twitch and everything very hyper-focused as a business. I always have. I take it too seriously, maybe, and I care about metrics, and I care about how popular the games are, and I care about longevity and like the potential of the games and like all these things. And I wonder how many games I've missed out on where I would have had so much fun, but I'm like, no, I can't stream that. I can't make videos on it.
There's been tons of games. So I've thought like, that looks super fun. I wish I could, you know,
yeah.
Play.
It doesn't help that YouTube, God forbid you post something that's not like your main game. And YouTube's yeah. like, yeah, no one's going to see this.
Not only is no one going to see this video.
You have a million subscribers. 10,000 are going to get notifications for this.
That's right. And not only that, but it's going to tank your algorithm favor for even the Destiny videos you post for the next week. It's like, man, I hate having to like earn my own subscribers back. They've opted in to see my content, and I have to earn them back after I post a bum video. That's such a feels bad, man.
And like, why do you think Mr. Beast reacts, Mr. Beast Gaming... All of them are on separate things because they're different enough that if you post them together, it will kill your channel. It is pretty much documented. The only way you can switch games is if you do what I do or what Mr. Fruit has done on certain games where your first 4, 5, 6, 7 videos on a new game, they do terrible, but you commit to it for a very long time, then it works. That's the only way because you have to relearn the algorithm and reteach it and you get new viewers and that's the only way it happens. And like Fruit's done it with Overwatch. He went Destiny and he did Overwatch and he did Among Us.
There is another way. There is another way. And it's what I've done. And it's you have to make content for that new game that's extremely searchable. So like best
top
gun in five,
division. Top
so
five
the,
this.
So the algorithm is going to do terrible. The video is going to bomb with your audience, but it hits that right target, and so many people are going to be searching for it, then it then pops off over time.
Yes.
And
yeah,
that's the only other thing you can do.
My Outriders videos, some of them have 200,000-300,000 views, and I posted a handful of them, and early on, they did okay because I kind of had exclusive footage, so they definitely did good, and they got like 100,000 views, and I was really happy with that, but over time, because they were pretty searchable, they did pop off, and so, you know, that's the strategy, so... Most content creators want to post other games. Most content creators are bored and burnt out of their game. But it is a huge business decision to play other games, and a lot of us feel trapped. So it's
and you have to lose a lot of money for a long time before you start to see the return on that investment to switch games.
Yeah. It's a tough thing. And like honestly, I would never recommend content creation to anyone who wants to still enjoy gaming. I still enjoy gaming, but I enjoy other games away from it. But also, like, just the way you analyze video games now, and like like when I look at the Game Awards, I'm not sitting there like, ooh, I'm like, okay, what game has potential? What are the potential audience? Yeah. What are the reactions? Like, I'm analyzing everything. It's kind of gross. It kind of ruins that hobby a little bit.
The magic of gaming. Yeah.
With all of that being said, it's still, I'd rather be doing this than most other things.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm still happier than I've ever been in my life.
It's not that bad. But I think we got in a little bit of a tangent. It's certainly, content creation is certainly not that bad. We're not trying to make it seem like it's like, we have the hardest job out there. No. We definitely don't. But it's like, I think the reason we brought it up is because we were talking about NFTs, where it's like, it may look on the outside like what Ninja, Dr. Disrespect, me, any of you guys are doing is like easy. Oh, I can do it too. And it's definitely not. And kind of that was our point. A couple of people in the chat were like, you were dissing NFTs. Absolutely not. You could do so well at NFTs. You can make more than all three of us combined with NFTs, but you have to really be smart about it. And you have to like really do your research about it. But that... it's kind of like anything, dude. It's like you can be a content creator if you're really smart about it, really good at it, do your research, all this stuff. You can do whatever you want that way, right? Just like the gains of NFTs and crypto is just so insane recently. So
speaking of Dr. Disrespect, he made a game studio.
Yeah.
Dr. Disrespect, I'll get the name of it here. I'll post a link in the chat so you guys can see it yourself. But he's making a game studio, which is kind of crazy. It's called Midnight Society. I'll get the Twitter here, and I'll post it in the chat. It's
called Shungite Society.
Midnight what? Society.
Oh, nothing.
And it's a new AAA game studio. They've got some people from the Halo, Call of Duty. If you guys don't know, Dr. Disrespect was a map designer for Sledgehammer. So he was a Call of Duty map designer before all the content creation stuff. So he knows what he's talking about. He's worked with Rogue Company to build a map on the Dr. Disrespect Arena map and everything.
That's right.
And Doc repeatedly roasts games. Like he roasts systems. He talks about games all the time. And he's like, what are you doing over there at Blue Ball Studio, right? But honestly, putting your money where your mouth is, he's like, all right, I keep complaining. I'm going to make a game. So it either pops off and is the best shooter game we've seen, or he gets absolutely roasted if it fails. Like he's gotta nail it. Especially with how much he like chirps all the other games. And sure. I hope he succeeds.
Well,
he's gonna hire
good talent within the industry, obviously.
Yeah. But I mean, that's a big project. Think, and if it's a AAA shooter game, I mean, I don't know how much it costs to make like a PUBG type game. Like if you wanted to clone a PUBG game and make that, how much does that cost you from start to finish? I don't know. I have no idea. But this is a multi-million dollar thing. Luckily, Doc has multiple millions of dollars. He can fund a lot of the game startup already. And then, you know, he'll get investors probably. He's got quite a bit of reach. But
so here's the crazy thing, though, is like you're going to get so many eyeballs in this game because you get to. Dude, I could post a video playing Dr. Disrespect's new game.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
There you 100%. Go. And like he's going to get all his content creator buddies.
Yeah.
Like how, like Tim the Tap Man. That's I don't even think he's going to have to pay Tim the Tap Man. He's just going to be like, yo, Tim,
hey,
we're
Tim.
Boys. This is my game. Can we play it? Right? Like he's going to get so many eyeballs on this game, and so that's already a huge advantage right off the start, right? There's good Among Us was dead for the longest time until suddenly it got some content creators involved and it blew up, right? So that is a huge advantage right off the bat, that he has this inner network of people that are willing to give massive exposure to his game, probably for free or for like way discounted rates, right?
Someone in chat has said, Warframe, 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 Warframe. There's a lot of Warframe stuff. But there actually is the new update.
Thing?
And apparently it's been like years in the making. It's a big expansion. I saw that this morning. Once I know more, maybe next episode we could talk about it. Like, is Warframe going to make a resurgence? I don't know. They've continued to update.
They have a very steady, dedicated community for sure. Yeah.
I've heard nothing but good things about that game, and I don't want to crap on it, but I will say personally, when I tried to get a new weapon, and it was like, all right, come back in 24 hours, and you can get it, I was like, I'm down. I can't, like, I just hate that kind of system of, like, oh, but you can pay to get it right now. Like, obviously, it's a free-to-play game. Like, obviously, they've got to make their money somehow, but for me, like, I don't like that kind of system, so.
Mm. No, and that's fair, and for me, I found it's just kind of repetitive and, like, easy, I find. And that's fine. Like, it's kind of mindless. But it's, like, very samey missions all the time. And I would just run through and blow everything up. And I think for some people that's fun. And, like, you can get rare drops. And the faster you blow things up. Like, in Diablo and Path of Exile, I blow stuff up. Like, I just sprint mm-hmm. through maps. And it's fun. But for some reason, with Warframe, I think the big issue is enemy density. It felt like I was doing the same thing, but there's like four enemies in the hallway that I pop. And sometimes there's more, like there are definitely more, but sometimes it feels like there's just not enough enemies. And it's like, I have these crazy powerful abilities. I want like 100 enemies to pop when I do this. And I get there's obviously limitations, but I don't know.
I don't have anything negative to say about Warframe. They reached out to me. Man, I don't. So Warframe players are gonna know better than I do because I haven't really played much. But there was a big DLC that kind of revolutionized things.
It went open world almost.
The planes.
It went like kind of open world. I don't remember what it was called. You're sort of like this ice planet or whatever. But they reached out to me when they had that big expansion, and had me do a couple of sponsored streams. And I wasn't gonna, it wasn't on my radar at the time. I didn't plan on playing it at all. But since they reached out to me, I was like, yeah, sure, why not? I'll do a couple of sponsored streams. Obviously, they're gonna pay me for my time investment. And I was like, hey, this game's pretty fun. Like, I really enjoyed my time with it. Now, I didn't stick with it because Destiny is my bread and butter, and I gotta, like we talked about earlier, it's like I gotta keep making content that my community's interested in. But my time playing Warframe, I really enjoyed. I will say that I didn't have any bad negative takeaways from that experience.
I didn't have a bad time, but I think one thing that we can all agree on is it's a very grindy game, and it's like I just don't have time for it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I gotta, obviously with Destiny, that's a constant grind. Anytime there's new content, you gotta grind that. And it's like Warframe players will literally tell you, bro, listen, after 100 hours the game's fun. The game's sick, you know what I mean? Just put that first 100 hours into it. I was like, I don't got 100 hours to spend. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
these 100 hours can be used somewhere else. And again, this is not crapping on. If you have Warframe, that's what you enjoy. Certainly having a game that you can sink your time into is fantastic. But like when you already cover a different game that already wants you to sink time, it's really hard to do.
It's like Final Fantasy and the new update. Everyone's like, it's a masterpiece. It's better than legitimately fully made Final Fantasy games. And I'm like, I want to experience that. But the amount of time I got to commit is like, when am I going to do that? It's tough. I'm so happy for them, but it just like, I can't.
Like, bro, 10 hours a day for 2 weeks. You're there. You're good to go.
Like, listen, like take off your summer. Just take off the summer. That's it. Like that's just one
ignore
summer.
Ignore your children. Ignore your wife.
Yeah. Oh, you have a wife?
not anymore. Not anymore.
Your wife's Warframe now, baby.
Extreme says I'm the only one still playing Outriders. Cagus, didn't you recently do a video covering some of the new Outriders stuff?
Yeah. And it did well. The algorithm liked that one because I put Destiny 2 in the title, I think. So it was like, is this a Destiny video? I just said this. You want to hear? This is
you
a great title. I said,
you tricked the algorithm.
No. I said the title was something like, this game with 600 players just embarrassed Destiny 2. Because that's all they were getting, literally. I think their height was 630 players before this update. And then, even still, they released a transmog system that, I mean, it quite literally does embarrass Destiny 2's transmog system.
Yeah.
No limits, no money, no micro, like nothing. Just switch. As soon as you get it, it's unlocked. Destiny had this such an overly complicated system, and it was limited. Like, it was so annoying. So I did kind of say, hey, this game just did a huge update. It's pretty fun. The no expedition timers is fantastic for solo. Like, it was really hard to hit those timers solo. But now, if you're a solo player, you can get in there. And I was still able to, with my old, like, pestilence ammo build, I was able to go in there and still, like, get the level 15, like, one done. So that was sweet. No, it was fun.
Cool.
Very cool.
Well, we've had a long episode today. I think we're going to wrap it up here. We've got more topics next week. We always have episodes. Someone asked earlier if we're going to do one next week. As long as everyone's here, no one's away.
Let me think about that.
22nd. I think it's the 22nd. It's the 20.
I'm gone. That's literally the day I leave. I'm okay. Out of town. I could do Tuesday.
I think I could do Tuesday. Hockey will be done. I'll be able to do Tuesday.
Yeah.
So we might have to do it to Tuesday.
Unless, like, the most epic exotic quest, unless Bungie drops a raid next Tuesday, we don't think they will. We're good. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we'll try to do one on Tuesday next week. Thank you so much for all the love and support. We appreciate you here at RGH Podcast, The Real Gamer Hour. We typically do these every Wednesday night at 9 p.m. Eastern time. We will see about next week. We'll make sure to tweet it out. So follow the Twitter. I'm MTashed.
I'm Cacus HD.
I'm True Vanguard.
And this was A Real Gamer Hour. Now we just got to get that idiot Joey to edit all this. So annoying.